From Sundress Media Productions, this is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host is Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
You want the truth? You should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of. You.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. What you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank you.
Yeah. Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
That's right, folks. Don't touch that dial.
Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360.
From the white sugar sands, beaches, palm trees, and pina coladas in the tropical and beautiful Tampa Bay area in the state of Florida on the eastern coast of the Gulf of Mexico.
Got the sun on my shoulders and my toes in the sand. Just dream and stitch.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for Monday, the 7th of July, 2014. Welcome.
You have an incoming transmission.
Not be televised.
The voice of news information has
the purpose of this program is to bring vital news.
I'm your host, Mark Skogman. Welcome. On tonight's program, the focus is politics, 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 as it usually is. Not always, but usually. And segment one is going to be a segment from Democracy Now! For today's date, which is Monday, the 7th of July, 2014. There is violence going on in the Middle East, in Israel, and on its borders. And it has a Florida connection because a Florida teenage boy was beaten by Israeli forces. There have been revenge attacks back and forth from the Palestinian side and the Israeli side, and it's been escalating. We have a brief segment about what has happened and about that Florida connection. That's segment one. Segment two is there was an event on last week on Wednesday, 2 July 2014, at the Freefall Theater in Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. It was sponsored by the Sunshine State Clean Energy Coalition, and it was a citizens' hearing on clean energy solutions. We have event coverage pre-recorded from that event, and that's very important. This is something that everyone should listen to, and I hope you'll listen closely. There's a lot of good information in this program about that. 16 minutes and 5 seconds from that event. Segment 3, in the second half of the program, segment 3 is going to be our panel discussion, pre-recorded, from St. Pete for Peace. It was a panel discussion on the Iraq War and the possibility of a new Iraq War starting. That was from 2 Mondays ago. Now, last week's program, we played part 1 of this discussion. This week, we're going to continue and end this series with part two. Now, that's going to be interesting as well. So part two, and here's a preview.
I don't think that Obama will choose magically to see the light all on his own. However, I do think that we still have the same window of opportunity that we have in Syria. And if we double our efforts over the next week to 10 days, focus those efforts on those who we can identify, who aren't on board with us, and focus on those folks in Congress that we can pull off the same thing we did in Syria on the opposite.
That was Michael Fox with the... He's the state director of Progressive Democrats of America, also the Pinellas County Democratic Executive Committee campaign chair. That was comments about his feelings about the what President Obama is going to do about the current situation in Iraq. And then segment four on the second half of the program. This is a panel discussion pre-recorded from Sunday, the 1st of June, 2014, at the Left Forum at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. And this features Christopher Hedges, Cornel West, Richard D. Wolfe with moderator Laura Flanders on the topic Anatomy of a Revolution, Thomas Paine and his writings, including Common Sense, Part 1. And that was from a conference whose theme was Revolution and or Reform, or rather Reform and or Revolution. Take your pick. Anyway, it's an interesting topic. It's very topical. You'd be surprised how the writings of Thomas Paine apply to the current time. So that's going to be another interesting discussion. Here's a preview of that segment.
This is probably the biggest attendance that the Left Forum has ever enjoyed. I think we have to always be willing both to be cautious and honest about what we're up against. Absolutely right. But always with a little space left for that unknowable reality when the things begin to happen really quickly.
So there's a preview of the segments. Yeah, the Left Forum, that's going to be part four of an ongoing series that I've been playing over the last few programs. There'll be a few more segments from that discussion. We're on part four now. That's going to be 9 minutes, 57 seconds. And the St. Pete for Peace discussion is going to clock out at 10 minutes, 10 seconds. Now, I want to speak just briefly. Yesterday, which was Sunday, 6 July, 2014, at approximately 8 a.m., Dallas Bohrer died. And Dallas Bohrer, he was the founder of the Blueberry Patch in St. Petersburg, an artist enclave, artist colony, and also a venue for lots of performing arts, well known in the St. Petersburg area. He died yesterday, so I wanted to just mention his death, memorialize that, and anybody who is a fan of the Blueberry Patch and Dallas Bohrer, we want to give our condolences to all the people that miss him. Okay? So that's one thing we're doing. And we're going to get to our next segment here, or our first segment, in just a moment. Here we go. And this is about the beating of that young Palestinian boy that is from the Tampa Bay, Florida area and was caught up in the violence in Israel and Palestine. This is approximately 3 minutes. 3 minutes, 12 seconds.
Israel's carried out deadly strikes in the Gaza Strip amidst continued violence following the killings of a Palestinian teenager and three teenage Israeli settlers. At least 9 Hamas members were killed Sunday when the Israeli military bombed 2 parts of Gaza. It was Israel's deadliest strike on Gaza since an 8-day assault in late 2012. Hamas has called the strikes a grave escalation and has threatened to retaliate. Palestinian rocket attacks have continued on southern parts of Israel, with 25 fired on Sunday. Israeli troops have massed along the Gaza border, threatening a potential full-scale attack. The deadly attack on Gaza comes amidst heavy unrest in the West Bank and in Arab towns inside Israel over last week's abduction and murder of Palestinian teenager Mohammed Abu Hudair. After days of clashes, Israel on Sunday arrested six Israeli suspects in connection with Mohammed's death. Reports out of Israel Today say three of the suspects have confessed. The Palestinian Authority's attorney general said an initial autopsy found burns on 90% of his body, suggesting he was burned alive.
The results of the autopsy showed two things. The main cause of death is burning. There were fumes inside the airways. This shows for sure that he was burned while he was alive.
It's widely believed Mohammed Kuder was killed in an act of revenge for the murders of three Israeli teenagers whose bodies were found last week. The murder followed calls for vengeance from Israeli political leaders, as well as in marches and on social media. A 15-year-old Palestinian-American cousin of Huder, Tarek Abu Huder, became the subject of global attention over the weekend after video emerged of him being severely beaten by Israeli officers. Tarek says he was watching demonstrations in East Jerusalem when he was seized. The video shows him lying on the ground as the officers repeatedly beat him with batons. He was left with facial bruises and severely swollen eyes and lips.
I was actually brutally attacked from the side and heard somebody screaming. They came and attacked me and actually went unconscious, and I woke up in the hospital.
Why did they attack you?
I don't know. That's why I ran.
They said that you were throwing stones,
something like this.
No, I jumped the fence and I tried to run away because I just saw somebody running at me, so I tried to run away.
Tarek Huder has been charged with assaulting a police officer and has been released into house arrest. He lives in Florida, but is in East Jerusalem visiting his family. He was with his cousin just moments before the kidnapping and murder last week. In a statement, the State Department said it was profoundly troubled by the assault, calling for a, quote, speedy, transparent, and credible investigation and full accountability for the apparent excessive use of force, unquote.
Okay, now to our next segment, segment two. And this is the coverage of the event sponsored by the Sunshine State Coalition, or excuse me, Clean Energy Coalition, Citizens Hearing for Clean Energy Solutions.
My name is Frank Jackalone. Okay. I'm the Florida Staff Director of the Sierra Club. And on behalf of the Sierra Club and the Sunshine State Clean Energy Coalition, let me welcome you to the Citizens Hearing for Clean Energy Solutions. The Sierra Club, founded by conservationist John Muir in May 1892, is the nation's largest grassroots environmental organization in the country, with 2.3 million supporters and members. Our Florida State headquarters is located right here in St. Petersburg, on Central Avenue, in a net zero energy building. It's covered by solar panels that generate more electricity than the Sierra Club and the other tenants in the building use. We feed solar power back to Duke Energy. The Sunshine State Clean Energy Coalition is an alliance of environmental, health, business, faith-based, and other groups which care about Florida's energy future. Our goal is to move Florida away from dirty fuels like coal and towards clean energy. We do this by helping communities advocate for the retirement of old and outdated coal plants and replacing them with clean energy solutions like solar, geothermal, and energy efficiency. Simply put, the brightest future for the Sunshine State is to invest in job-creating and money-saving clean energy solutions. Across the country, electric utility companies are investing in efficiency. Wait a minute, I knew I skipped a page here. Okay. All right, so why have we asked you to be here tonight? For a hearing on a hot July evening, at the beginning of the hurricane season, just 2 days before a national holiday. What is so urgent? Why did we drag you here tonight? It's because we have a once-in-a-decade opportunity to save consumers and businesses billions of dollars on our power bills, and at the same time, steer the state of Florida towards a healthier, clean energy future. Energy efficiency is the cheapest, fastest, and safest way to meet Florida's electricity needs. The cost of coal, gas, and nuclear power is going up, while the price of solar power and efficiency programs keep going down. Duke Energy, Tampa Electric Company, and Florida Power and Light can give consumers a break by investing in energy efficiency, which saves consumers money and protects our health. Energy efficiency programs lower customers' monthly bills, saving consumers money and supporting Florida's economy. Now, does that sound worthwhile to you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's more. This year, the Florida Public Service Commission will set new standards for energy efficiency for the next 10 years under the Florida Energy Efficiency and Conservation Act. This process presents an immensely important opportunity for us all. Energy efficiency is the cheapest, fastest, and most reliable energy source. If Florida's utilities, including Duke, TECO, FPNL, are required to achieve higher energy efficiency goals, their customers, that's all of us, will see lower bills, job growth, and the environmental benefits of an energy-efficient economy. Now, across the country, utility companies are investing in efficiency to cut monthly energy bills, and they're doing more on solar and wind. But Florida lags way behind most of the country, as you will learn tonight. Florida Electric Utilities have now submitted their request to the Public Service Commission, and it's bad news. Their proposed energy savings goals are at unprecedented lows. They want to eliminate solar pilot projects. This means we will have higher energy bills for ratepayers and pollution from new, unnecessary power plants. The Public Service Commission needs to hear from us. We ask for a public hearing. We ask them to come here to Pinellas County or somewhere else in Florida and hold a public hearing. They said no. They're isolated in Tallahassee, comfortable to be there. They said no. Here's a direct quote from the chair of the Public Service Commission. Quote, given the technical nature of this goal-setting procedure and no legislative directive to take public testimony, I do not find it necessary to hold a public hearing. Persons without the resources to intervene may file written comments in the docket. We are here tonight at the Citizens Hearing to make sure that all of our voices are heard. There is a court reporter present who will be recording our comments. We will have some experts testify and then hear from the public so that all of you can let the commission know that you want energy savings to protect our health and lower our bills. This is your hearing, and we encourage you to provide your comments tonight. Now I would like to introduce three of Florida's top advocates and organizers who are here with us. First is Julia Hathaway. Julia, raise your hand. Julia is Sierra Club's representative who served as the first organizer for the Sunshine State Clean Energy Coalition.
Yo.
And helped to coordinate tonight's event. The other coordinator of the hearing tonight is Sierra Club conservation organizer Britton Cleveland. Britton, are you there? And finally, I would like to turn the microphone over to the third person, Tim Heberlein, the political director of the Florida Consumer Action Network, one of the co-founders of the Sunshine State Clean Energy Coalition. I am happy to announce that Tim will join Sierra Club staff full-time next week. Tim will serve as our MC for the rest of the program tonight. Tim, take it away.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you very much. Ooh, that's very loud. My name, as Frank mentioned, is Tim Heberlein. I'm the political director with the Florida Consumer Action Network, and I'll be your MC for tonight. And just before we get started, I want to lay out some ground rules. We'll have some expert testimony, as Frank mentioned, as well as receive public comment. Please, when you're making your statements, please direct them at as if the PSC or to the commission, if you were, because we will be submitting these to the official record on the 21st in Tallahassee when the PSC has their hearing there. So, as Frank mentioned, why are we here? The Sunshine State Clean Energy Coalition believes that your voices need to be heard. So thank you very much for coming. The PSC didn't think this was necessary, but by your presence here, obviously they're wrong. This is an important issue, and I'm so glad to be part of the team. Your comments are being recorded, so please direct that. When you approach the microphone, please state your name, your address, and make your comments. So first, sorry, I have some notes here. Well, first I want to recognize some of the elected officials in the room and thank you very much for being advocates for the coalition as well as clean energy solutions here in Florida. First is Representative Dwight Dudley. St. Pete Council Member Darden Rice. Next County Commissioner Ken Welch, thank you. City of Seminole Councilor Patty Plantamura. City of Gulfport City Council Member Yolanda Roma. Gulfport Council Member Michael Fridovich. And Safety Harbor member Andrew Zodro. And I believe two of our elected officials would like to make some comments. We're going to limit the comments for the elected officials to 2 minutes. So, first, Representative Dudley. Thank
you. Good evening. Mark Dudley, Mr. 68, Florida House of Representatives. I just wanted to open here tonight in talking about the legislature and what they're doing on our behalf. And sadly, there's not much happening there because many of the proposals, I guess all the proposals actually, have not been heard. Sadly, offered legislation to reorganize the Public Service Commission because it appears that they seem to favor large utility companies in granting rate hikes every time they ask for them. And this appears to be the case virtually all the time. And we're wondering if there happens to be any connection between the $3.9 million in contributions that were given just in this last session of legislature, or maybe in the $18 million that were given over the last 8 years to the Florida legislature. We have offered a whole host of variety of legislation to be useful to consumers, such as truth in billing. You know, in 2006, a law was created, this advanced nuclear cost recovery. The utilities, particularly Duke, has taken billions of dollars. They promised to build a nuclear plant. They obviously, it's somewhat historic at this point, they ran into quite a bit of trouble, and that was canceled, but they haven't returned the money yet. So we're really wondering when that money's going to come back, but we're not holding our breath. And under the law, they're allowed to continue to take billions of dollars. There's no end in sight, it's ad nauseum, ad infinitum. They just keep taking money. Now, we refer to this not as that wonky long name, but just the utility tax. So what are we doing in response to that? So we've offered legislation, both the sessions of legislature I was present, to repeal the utility tax. It got no hearing, sadly. Also, the ad valorem tax exemption, a number of people here worked to try to get the repeal of the, or to offer an ad valorem tax exemption for businesses that would put renewable and alternative devices on their business. And you would think that's a business-friendly thing to do, so that would be a great thing to do, and the majority party and so on would leadership would shepherd that through. Well, that didn't happen either. And, in fact, it was stopped in committee. It was never heard. And, sadly, no change occurred. So the legislature clearly is not the place for change. Reuben asked me 40 years ago when he wanted transparent government, government in the sunshine, went to the people. And we've drafted two amendments, one to repeal the utility tax, one to deregulate renewable power. We think energy policy in the state of Florida needs to be changed and changed dramatically. So be looking for those. We ask for your help in that. And thank you for being here tonight and for your championing the cause and joining together so all our voices can be heard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. And now for 2 minutes, Councilmember Darden Harkness. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. My name is Darden Rice, and I'm your St. Pete City Council member with you here tonight. And I am proud to tell you that the city of St. Pete is one of the first green cities in the state of Florida, as well as Pinellas County was one of the first green counties to earn that designation a number of years ago. But I think all of us here in this room know that there are so many, that we're not going to stop there, that there's a whole lot more things that we can do to make our community greener. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're here tonight. I'm here because, like you, I also think it's important, and I believe that the state of Florida can achieve and enact a blueprint for a clean energy future. And in doing so, it'll help reduce bills, it'll support our economy, and it will create jobs. But we need a public service commission that will help us reach those goals, not stand in the way. We need a public service commission that actually is a consumer watchdog that listens to the public and not corporate profits. I'm your leader on the municipal level, and cities can do much with...
Okay, that is comments from elected officials at the Sunshine State Clean Energy Coalition Citizens Hearing for Clean Energy Solutions. We're going to break for network news and commercials, and then come back with half two of Spectrum 360. We still have the St. Pete for Peace discussion and also the panel discussion from the Left Forum for you as well. Stay with us. Spectrum 360 will return with more Spectrum 360. Ow!
News Radio. I'm Melissa Rayberger. Israel launched another military offensive tonight against the Gaza Strip. The goal of the airstrikes is to stop rocket attacks into Israel. NBC's Ayman Mohideen is monitoring the situation in Jerusalem.
In the past few hours, more than 80 rockets have been fired from Gaza into southern Israel, and the Israeli military has deployed hundreds of reserve soldiers to the south of the country.
At the request of U.S. security officials, airports in Europe have begun asking passengers flying to the U.S. to prove their electronic devices are not bombs. NBC's Tom Costello has more.
From Heathrow in London to Frankfurt Main, Charles de Gaulle in Paris, across Europe and the Middle East, an intense focus on electronic devices. U.S.-bound passengers must now turn their devices on to prove they're not packed with explosives.
The White House is not commenting on reports that a suspected German double agent sold secrets to the U.S. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said today that if the allegations are true, it would be a contradiction of the trust and cooperation between partners. This is NBC News Radio.
We got a song, then we got a song. Do we have a turntable?
Hey, everybody, this is Andy Powell, guitarist, Wishbone Ash, and you are listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Okay, so but it's not a reel-to-reel, though, right?
It's Nostalgic Radio and Cars every Tuesday night from 7 until 8.
We're doing vinyl tonight.
And one of my favorite pinball machines was Aces and Kings. It was a Williams machine. 40 years later, I found that machine.
Don't wait 40 years to find out about Nostalgic Radio and Cars. It's on Tuesday night from 7 until 8.
Here on Tantalk.
You maybe owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Every 10 seconds in America, a new small business is started. Behind every small business, there's a story worth knowing. Let's talk small business with John Fraser. He's on a mission to celebrate success by spotlighting Florida small businesses, covering issues that hit home, your pocket, and your small biz success.
Biz Buzz Tampa Bay, Florida's hottest small business talk radio show, Saturday mornings at 9 a.m.
Are you looking for a job? Join me, Gene Hodge, on the Employment Opportunity Hour, Thursdays from 7 to 8 p.m., where I will tell you and share with you, as well as answer all of your questions and help you find enjoyable employment instead of a job. This is the only talk show that talks about everyone who makes up our workforce. Join me on the Employment Opportunity Hour every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on the Employment Opportunity Hour.
The Revolutionary Road Radio Show, a production of the Revolutionary Caucus and Squatter Records, is a radio show committed to promoting revolutionary and radical ideas through political engagement, discussion, music, art, and culture. Hosted by Reverend Bruce Wright and hip-hop artist Crown Dion and also Professor Chris Warren, with special guest co-host, housing rights and community activist Connie Burke. We broadcast at the second and fourth Sundays of each month at 11 p.m. on 1340 Talk.
The excitement happens every day at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium. You can find yourself in the water with a dolphin, feeding a stingray, watching our world-famous dolphin shows, sailing on our eco boat tour, and even having your picture taken with a dolphin. The Clearwater Marine Aquarium is home of the world's most famous dolphin, Winter, the star of the movie Dolphin Tale, filmed at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium. Winter lost her tail but is now healthy and swimming freely due to a prosthetic tail. Be exposed to marine life and more. Take a behind-the-scenes tour to see how the animal hospital works. View the animal's food prep kitchen, the vet's lab, the surgical suite, and rehab areas. The aquarium houses river otters, sea turtles, stingrays, sharks, and a host of brilliant fish. Come to the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, 249 Windward Passage in Clearwater, or check them on the web at seawinter.com for more information. Open Sunday through Thursday, 10 to 5. Friday and Saturday, 10 to 6. Call 727-441-1790. Make plans to enjoy the day at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, 249 Windward Passage in Clearwater, the official home of Winter, the star of the movie Dolphin Tale, a lasting memory.
All these silly left-wing and right-wing politicians and people who think they know what the normal is, they don't. We know what the normal is. Beyond normal.
Oh, do we?
Yes, we do.
Well, a lot of people think we're beyond normal.
That's beyond normal. What's your beef?
With Frank, Judy, and Laurie.
Wednesdays at 11 p.m. on Tan Talk Network Radio. For all you millions of people out there. And our email address will be frankfamousmedia@yahoo.com. And the call and telephone number here in the studio will be 727-441-3000.
This is the radio program Spectrum 364, Monday, the 7th of July, 2014. I'm your host, Mark Skogman. We're going to go right back to more content here on Spectrum 360. I want one of those enjoyable jobs that they were talking about during the break.
Spectrum 360 with Mark Skogman.
Yeah. I am going to tell you all the things I do, and we're going to go back to part two of the St. Pete for Peace Iraq War discussion right now for 9 minutes, 57 seconds, and then come back with the Left Forum discussion. Enjoy.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see a picture of John McCain standing there talking with a bunch of neo-Nazis and saying, there's something going on here, everybody, and that we have gotten them elected into office in pretty prominent positions. That's not made-up stuff. You know, we don't have the same level of proof about the Trade Center coming down. I just, I don't know that we will ever be able. Obama is articulate. He's calm. He comes across well. He's very, very bright, and I think
he's got a very soothing voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. I think people just buy into him.
I do.
Folks like you.
When I first, I got to admit this. When I first heard him speak at that Democratic convention, I sobbed.
Me too. I did too. I feel like a jilted lover. Yeah, we're so hard on that darn campaign.
Did a chill go down your leg?
Like
Chris Matthews?
It was, ew. And I apologize on my own. I apologize. But you want to believe him. I think the point is that people want to believe him. They want so much for that pre-election rhetoric to be true that they're blinding themselves to the reality, and that's the problem. How do you get past that? They're drinking the Kool-Aid, and they're not willing to drink that Kool-Aid.
Brian, how do you get past that? How does the perception change?
You can't. It's too late. It's all over for us with Obama. He is a done deal. And he's just going to ride out the... I mean, we can go out and continue to do our things, and I think that all of you here probably are of a like mind and will continue to be anti-war and protest and carry our philosophies. But he campaigned as a dove, and he sold it, and the press bought into it and embraced it and has embraced it ever since. And so he's perceived that way, even though he isn't, you know? I mean, the Republicans have been calling him a socialist, you know. And but I thought I claimed to fame in the campaign only because they thought that Obama was a socialist, okay? And that was a false application, but the press bought into it, and then they started looking at socialism. The two-party system is corrupted.
Yeah.
So it's too late in the sense that we need to reform and reconstruct our political system, and that means that we have to have election reform, public financing of elections, which means it will open it up to multi-parties. We need to change our economic system.
We hear a lot of options around the table, but what do you think will happen? What do you think the decision that Obama will make will be, beginning with Susan?
I think ultimately it's going to be done. I think if there's going to be a military action there, precise and steady. I think he used the word steady today, didn't he? Intense and steady. At least Kerry did. I think it's going to happen. I think they're going to whitewash it and paint it as something that's very surgical, and it's not going to actually involve people dying and stuff like that. It's going to be drone strikes or air strikes. It's going to be very clean, where only brown people die and get hurt. And that's going to, and it's going to fly with Americans, I think, sadly, because Americans are given misleading and false information by our media. That's going to slide, and it's a real shame. But I think, unfortunately, that's the direction we're headed. I think, the question before that was going to be about why can't he just come out and say, you Republicans got us into this mess, and I'm not going to, because they all want the same end. I think it's just a matter of how they paint it in the media to get there. And so.
Mike, do you agree with this?
No, I'm more optimistic because I don't think that Obama will choose magically to see the light all on his own. However, I do think that we still have the same window of opportunity that we had with Syria. And if we double our efforts over the next week, 10 days, focus those efforts on those who we can identify, who aren't on board with us, and focus on those folks in Congress, that we can pull off the same thing we did this year. Call me optimistic.
Put your body is where your mouth is, right?
Put your body in the machine.
That's it.
Who has a question for the panel?
Does anyone know what the current level of military contractors that the United States has in Iraq pre this current crisis?
What was it like over 6 months?
600. We just sent in like the parade.
No, I'm not talking about the 600 that are being deployed now. I'm talking about the. It's in the tens of thousands. I know that. I was wondering if anybody has an accurate.
Oh well, yeah, the ones that are in the largest embassy in the world. It's hard to say.
I mean, the contractors that were left there after this, the troops were supposedly withdrawn. My understanding is after the troops were withdrawn, quote unquote, there was 180,000 contractors left. I'm wondering if anybody knows what the current level is, because that was, of course.
And who's paying those people? You are. Lucky.
United States.
We're paying for that.
I don't have a number of the contractors, but I looked up as of 2014, just in Iraq, the American government has spent $816 billion. Okay, so we're pushing and getting close to $1 trillion on Iraq. If you combine it with Afghanistan, it's $1.54 trillion.
Now, that's not including the VA veterans coming back?
Correct. No, just the military. And the military is 55% of the American budget, and then the veterans' benefits are an additional 6%. So your 61% of the entire country's budget goes to the military in some, one way or another.
No, I'm not. There's stuff away from my son.
I agree. I'm just saying, it's like the TPP. We're going down to the standards of these corporations or in these other countries. And the TTIP, Europe is saying, oh no, you're not going to come. You're not going to make us lower our standards. We're not going to let in, you know, GMOs. We're not going to, you know. So I mean, it's like we will gladly stoop to the lowest of the low just so we can trade, so we can make money for corporations. Whereas Europe takes a stand.
And don't anybody be fooled by the whole business of sending advisors to Iraq and thinking that's what they are.
I don't think anybody here will.
Because we did this in Vietnam. Advisors were special forces guys who went in there, and special forces guys that we're sending into Iraq are trying to determine where the drones need to be firing. They aren't in there advising anything else. So, and these folks in ISIS.
So, who wants to address the black budget or the partition of Iraq?
I just appreciate that question, and I think that the partitioning of Iraq, it, you know, brings us back to the question of the history of colonialism in the Middle East to begin with, which all of the borders that you see in the Middle East and all of what is characterized by the U.S. media as religious sectarian conflict, that, you know, it really offends me the way that it's presented, that, you know, it's presented as if this is just some tribal, ancient conflict that just goes back to biblical times or something like that, when in fact, all of the divisions, the contradictions, maybe there were differences amongst the people there, but to the point where there are militias and just outright sectarian warfare is a direct product of colonialism and imperialism strategy of divide and conquer.
That has, like the Hindu-Gypsies.
Yeah, and it has carried that strategy out in the Middle East. It has carried that strategy out in Africa, where you have all these countries that literally in the Berlin Conference, European countries came together and carved up Africa like a cake and said, oh, France will get this part, France will get, you know, Britain will get that part. And they did the same thing with the Middle East. They
and
did
South
the same,
America.
Same thing with South America. Same thing with this continent. You know, Mexico, half of Mexico was stolen by the U.S. And then when indigenous people try to cross a false colonial border to get back on their own land, they get put in mass graves. And ISIS, or ISIL, you know, is you know, the U.S. media is trying to drum up this nightmare of Islamic caliphate that's supposed to keep me up at night. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting about that whole Islamic caliphate is that it totally disregards the colonial borders that between Syria and Iraq and Lebanon and other places. So I think it's, you know, regardless of their agenda in the final analysis, I think it points to the fact that people reject the verdict that has been imposed on them by this system. That's what we're seeing all over the world, and you know, I reject it too. I reject those borders as well.
Rendering it irrelevant.
Okay, that is the last segment, part two of two, for the panel discussion with St. Pete for Peace on the Iraq War and prospects for having another war in Iraq due to current events. Now we're going to go on to the last segment for this tonight's program, and that is part four of the left forum discussion on Thomas Paine and revolution and what we need to do now. And that's going to start in just a moment. Okay, and here is part four of Christopher Hedges, Cornel West, and Richard D. Wolff on Thomas Paine and revolution. This relates to exactly what we're going through now.
And this is probably the biggest attendance that the left forum has ever enjoyed. I think we have to always be willing both to be cautious and honest about what we're up against. Absolutely right. But always with a little space left for that unknowable reality when the things begin to happen really quickly.
And that's a segment, a brief quote from Richard D. Wolff. Here's the rest of it.
And vilification.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't compare my case to Thomas Paine. Yeah, good God almighty. Yeah, Lord, Lord, Lord. No, but I mean, I just think that it's impossible to tell the truth, especially about the vicious legacy of white supremacy and its connection to capitalist exploitation, without knowing you're a candidate for character and literal assassination. That's just a fact. Over 400 years, there has never been a person from John Brown on the vanilla side to Nat Turner to Ella Baker who were told the truth about white supremacy and its connection to capitalism, who was not targeted chronically, systematically across the board. And that's why you have to have your spirit intact. You can get it intact in a secular way. I get it intact with love of Jesus. People say whatever they want. That's you. I got my integrity to preserve. And how do you bear witness in the face of those kinds of lies and those kinds of crimes? And that's what they are. They're crimes against humanity. The new Jim Crow is a crime against humanity. Yeah. The educational systems in our cities, those are crimes against humanity, the way those precious children are treated. Our working class abused in this way. That's a crime against humanity. And the drones dropping bombs on innocent children. Vicious crimes against humanity in the name of the U.S. people. We had to just call it for what it is.
Yeah.
But using that kind of language doesn't just get you in trouble, but it can get you killed.
Yeah.
One last thought about this, and maybe there's a productive tension between Brother Cornel and myself. We don't know where we are in the revolutionary process. You only know that afterwards. Was it the right time? Was it possible? Were the conditions in place? You never know. And part of what it means to be a critic in the spirit of Tom Paine is that you've always got to push. You've got to push to see where and how far it can go. We are here. And you are here. And this is probably the biggest attendance that is the whole 3 days here that the left forum has ever enjoyed. These are very interesting bits of information. I think we have to always be willing both to be cautious and honest about what we're up against. Absolutely right. But always with a little space left for that unknowable reality when the things begin to happen really quickly. That author I referred to earlier from another place in time who made famous that question, what is to be done, was famous for another remark he made about this question. He said, sometimes for decades, nothing happens. And then in a few weeks, decades happen. We have to be open. Thomas Paine was open, because if you're not open, you can't write that way. part of the, it's not just the effect his writing has on the revolutionary situation, it's also the fact that a revolutionary situation, even when not grasped consciously, plays its role in shaping what it was possible for Thomas Paine to write. And we have to be in sync with that unknowable extra that's there, partly to live in a time like this, and partly to be able to be progressive in a time like this.
Alexander Berkman, in an essay, writes about, called, the essay is called The Invisible Revolution, precisely that point, where he talks about a life in a revolutionary society as being like a kettle that is boiling, and that you don't actually see anything, that all of the traditional edifices of power and structures not only remain in place, but appear monolithic. And that when they collapse, when they go down, it appears to be absolutely sudden and unpredictable. And I, as a foreign correspondent, that was something that I experienced covering the revolutions in Eastern Europe, including the East German Stasi state. Yeah. Where until our security and surveillance state was the most pervasive security apparatus in human history. We've, of course, done things the Stasi didn't even dream of. And what happened was you had, in Leipzig, mostly Lutherans holding candlelit vigils, and they weren't even very clear about their first demand was that they be legally recognized as a group. They hardly appeared revolutionary, and yet they captured that kind of zeitgeist, which I think is there within the American society, looking for a language to express itself. And Paine gave revolutionary America that language. But I think in that sense, we are rapidly losing faith in the institutions, the formal structures of power, which have become wholly owned subsidiaries of the corporate state. But language is key, and Berkman makes that point, that as long as you continue to speak in the false language of American democracy, liberty, how can you use the word liberty when every single one of us in this room has all of our electronic communications downloaded and stored in perpetuity by the NSA? You cannot use the word liberty for a population that has wholesale surveillance. You have to use the word slavery. And any government that has the capacity to use that mechanism will use it. Hannah Arendt writes in The Origins of Totalitarianism that the purpose of wholesale surveillance in a totalitarian state is not to find crimes, but to gather evidence. So at the moment that you seek to criminalize an entire group of people, you have the trivia. It's not evidence, because of course at that point crimes and truth and all of this is a fiction. But you have the material, and that's precisely what's happening to us. And so when that Stasi state fell, it fell in a week, and it fell when suddenly this handful of protesters in Leipzig were joined by 70,000 people. And Erich Honecker, who had been in power for 19 years, sent down an elite paratroop division to fire on the crowd. And the paratroopers wouldn't do it. Just in the same way the Cossacks would not fire during the bread riots in Petrograd, which forced the Tsar to get into a railway carriage and abdicate even before he got back to Petrograd. And the same thing happened in East Germany. Honecker was gone within a week because those paratroopers would not shoot on the crowd.
So I have a question that's completely related to what you just said. Because I think insofar as we're talking about the anatomy of revolution, we also need to talk about the anatomy of the counter-revolution. Sure. And how, if we are talking about a man who was an abolitionist and who was the great rhetorician of the revolution, we end up with a slaveholding republic. How it was that U.S., not colonial, but U.S. forces did fire on rebels in the Shays Rebellion and the uprisings against debt in that period between the Declaration of Independence and the writing of the Constitution. Thomas Paine supported the banks getting paid. He was against the mob. He said you get changed by rule of law or by the military or by the mob, and he was on the side of the law. Our laws come out of that period. I'd love you to address the anatomy of the counter-revolution.
Well, the thing to remember about Paine was that in Pennsylvania, there was no divide between Whig and Tory. The Pennsylvania elite, which was Quaker and Anglican, were wholly on the side of the British monarchy. The Pennsylvania Assembly backed the property class. And so, unlike in the other colonies, the opposition to the king and the independence movement was expressed through Paine and radical constitutionalists who had no connection with pre-revolutionary power. And so that in Pennsylvania, after the revolution, those who take power, unlike every other colony, had not been in power before. Now, this alliance was extremely uneasy because, as you correctly point out, with a slaveholding class, and let's not forget, that we had at the beginning of the revolution African-American soldiers until George Washington, a slaveholder, banned the conscription of blacks into the Continental Army.
Okay, that was the discussion at the Left Forum at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City on Sunday, 1 June 2014. Before that, you heard the St. Pete for Peace panel discussion on the prospect of another Walk Roar. Before that, we heard from the Sunshine State Coalition for Clean Energy, the Citizens Hearing for Clean Energy Solutions. Before that, a segment of Democracy Now! We're going to have another great Spectrum 360 for you next week, so I want you to keep listening. It's going to be as good or better. We're going to have some pretty interesting guests on the next few programs, so continue to listen.
Well, we will continue at another time.
So goodbye and hello.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Spectrum 360 is produced by Sunburst Media Productions and originates from St. Petersburg, Florida. Executive producer, host, audio engineer, and senior reporter, Mark Skogman. Associate producer, Terry Weeks. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. for 1 hour and online anytime via podcast. To access the podcast, go to www.facebook.com/Spectrum360 Radio Program and click on the program link. Or go to www.tantalk1340.com, click on podcasts, and click on Spectrum 360. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters and the staff of Spectrum 360. Listen next week for another interesting, informative, and entertaining Spectrum 360 radio program.
That's all, folks.